Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Sunday, November 3rd, 2013. You probably won't hear this until Wednesday or Tuesday when we finally post it. Today is podcast number 359. And with me, let me do it this way. Let me just change my audio slightly. There we go. And now, ladies and gentlemen, allow me to present to you a man so interesting, Freemasons strive to learn the secrets of his handshake. He is the most interesting man in the liberty movement, Jake Shannon.
You are awesome, boy. Now you're like upping every time. The Freemason handshake, I like that one.
It's good to have you back on the show, Jake. I say Jake Shannon is the most interesting man in the liberty movement, and people think, well, you know, that's an interesting thing to say. Oh, Ben's trying to kiss up to Jake, or Ben's just trying to, you know, get some attention or whatever for Jake. But that's, let me just run through some of the facts here about Jake Shannon. Former radio host in Salt Lake City, professional hypnotist. His image is used to sell tropical trance chewing gum. Now, here's the thing about this tropical trance chewing gum. You're walking through the grocery store and you look over, you're getting ready to check out, and you look over and you see this black and white swirl. And you don't know why, but you can't help yourself. You have to reach over and pick it up. And you fight the urge because you really don't want any chewing gum, but the next thing you know, you're holding it. And you look at it and you realize you have to let go of it now to let the checkout person scan it. And you don't want to let go of it. And you don't know why. And then you finally get the thing outside and you open it and you see the image of Jake Shannon. And you realize he has control of your mind. That's Jake Shannon. He is he's former chairman of the Libertarian Party in Utah. He's the author of a ton of books. I'm going to put a link to his Amazon page in today's show notes. Just click on that and it'll take you over and you can just see the list of all the books that he's written. He invented a martial art. Now, think about that for a second. Think about, can you name anybody in history who invented a martial art? Maybe you can. Maybe the Marquis of Sade, what was his name? Marquis of...
The Marquis de Sade?
Yeah, no.
The Marquis of Queensbury.
Queensbury, yeah. He didn't actually invent boxing, modern boxing, but he codified it and sort of organized it. But Jake invented a martial art.
Now, wait, I do have to cut in. I'm sorry, I love this. Anytime anybody wants to talk about my accomplishments, I'm the last person to interrupt. But I do have to clarify. I think I'm probably closer to the Marquis of Queensbury because I've kind of codified it, this catch wrestling martial art, but otherwise brilliant, loving it so far. I did invent a fitness tool called the Mace Bell that's quite popular. If you Google that, it's pretty crazy how many people are using that thing.
Yeah, and I believe that appears in one of your books as well, if I recall.
Yes.
Jake, you know, when Jake goes to Spain, the bulls run from him. That's the kind of guy we're talking about here.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. I'm a pretty goofy guy, but I guess the psychiatrist or psychologist might say obsessive or something of that ilk, but you know what happens, Ben, is there something that I want and it doesn't exist, and so I go and I make it. It's as simple as that. It's just good old entrepreneurship. And so almost everything that I've gotten involved with is just because it's something I think is cool. And if nobody had really tackled it, and I'm like, well, there's gotta be other people out there like me that might, you know, want to read this book or, you know, study this type of thing or whatever. And I just dig in. And I've been lucky that way that other people have, you know, found it at least modestly interesting and supported my endeavors, and yourself included. I always appreciate coming on your show, and had you on my show when I still had it. But the downside is I'm not really motivated. I'm not a person motivated by money. In one of my prior incarnations, I hold my master's of science in financial engineering, which is basically financial mathematics. And I worked in investment banking and mortgage banking, and I was miserable. And I walked away from that, and everybody was like, "Are you nuts? You're making, you know, a six-figure salary. You're, you know, you got all this stuff." And I just was miserable. And they're like, "You're leaving to become a hypnotist? Are you crazy?" So, I'm not motivated by money. I'm not even motivated by ego. I had this similar reaction when I walked away from the radio show. And it wasn't anything bad. I loved the station I was on. It was really – they gave me complete freedom to speak my mind as I wanted. They didn't tell me, you know, you got these talking points or anything like that. But I just – I'm not motivated by ego or, like, fame as much either. I'm motivated by creativity. And, you know, the second I feel like there's a speed bump with my creativity, I got to switch the game up. So So I guess that makes me, you know, a bit sporadic and all over the place, but I do at least complete the projects and get them out there. But anyway, nonetheless, thank you so much for having me on the show. I always love talking to you, Ben.
Hey, no problem at all. Before we really get into it, I wanted to touch on this hypnotist thing because, I think it's kind of timely right now. A lot of people are really confused about what is and what isn't hypnotism. And there's a lot of people, you know, saying that they're doing hypnotism that maybe that even harms the, that's kind of like a lot of people, you know, I'm an anarchist, but there are a lot of people who call themselves that who do some really bad things, and it kind of it tilts the way people think of it. But, you know, Jake does hypnotism, and you do that professionally, and you actually help people. And you even, do you still do the Skype hypnotism?
Yeah. So I do Skype gnosis. I just, this year, the thing that I've kind of, you know, I've walked away a little bit from politics. I'm becoming more kind of, I guess, agorist in the sense that I'm like, I get the political system and it's cool and whatever. And I've tried to do my thing there. And there is, for me, my involvement was inspired by, like, so many other people, Ron Paul. Now, I've been libertarian since probably 94. I had a college roommate kind of convert me. But I'd always been apolitical. And when I saw Ron Paul, I was like, man, this guy's brilliant. He never wins anything. Well, I mean, he won, obviously, to be a House a representative of the U.S. House. But he doesn't win these presidential races. But, man, what a brilliant method, a didactic method, a method for educating people by using the system. It's such a huge bullhorn. But I'm becoming a little disillusioned with that and bored, frankly. And so I've stepped away from that and just doing more things like writing and things of that nature. The hypnotism, is something that I've been involved with for a very long time. And you're totally right. I mean, that you totally nailed it. It's like being an anarchist. Like, most anarchists are just brilliant, nice, peace loving people. And then sometimes you'll have people claim to be anarchists and they're total douchebags and ruin it for everybody else. And so it goes with hypnosis. You know, hypnosis is, it's really a fascinating thing. And I find myself drawn to these areas where the lines aren't stark black and white, which I know sounds very strange for a libertarian because we seem to try to throw everything into a black and white context. But, hypnosis is very weird and it's very interesting. And I find so much of what I've been spending my time on in the last 5 years or so has been working around the relationship between language and thought. And they are inextricably tied. What I find very interesting, and you can intuitively grasp this on your own. I mean, you can't have two conversations at the same time, or you can try. It's very difficult to really grasp what's happening. Or, you know, some people who speak multiple languages, sometimes they'll think and dream in one language, or other times they'll think and dream in another. Or you're at the grocery store and you forget your grocery list. You talk to yourself, I got to get eggs or milk or bread or diapers or whatever. There's this relationship between language and thought. And this is not new. I mean, philosophers of the 20th century, guys like Wittgenstein, this made up a large, the Vienna Circle made up a large part of their research project in philosophy. So it's a very interesting place. And yeah, a lot of people trying to help people with hypnosis, and I do all of it. I do comedy hypnosis. I have a great show that I'm very proud of, and I've taken it around and toured a bunch of different states doing it, and it's great. And yes, I'm in that chewing gum promotion, which is quite weird. But helping people with hypnosis, you enter into a very strange space, because as a hypnotist, I deal with the conscious mind and the unconscious, and people want to make that much more nebulous or confusing than it really is. And I like to define my terms, you know, like in any good debate or any good conversation, you want to make sure that your definitions are, that you come to terms with your audience, that you're both sharing the same terminology. And when I say your conscious mind, I just frankly mean your attention, what you're paying attention to, what you're conscious of. When I speak of your unconscious, I'm talking about everything else that you do that you're not paying attention to. And that's 99%. You and me sitting here, or somebody listening to your podcast, they're hopefully sitting upright or something. And there's a million little micromuscular adjustments going up on behind the scenes, keeping them upright. Otherwise, they'd be plopped over onto the floor into a big quivering heap. Blinking, their eyes focusing, food digesting, blood circulating, breathing. Most of what happens is automatic or unconscious. And so what's so interesting is I look at hypnotism as being like a problem solver. I don't want to be a counselor or a therapist. What I do is not medical. Now, there's medical applications. I mean, you can, there's scientific literature showing how hypnosis is brilliant for things like irritable bowel syndrome. In fact, there's quite a bunch of literature on using hypnosis for breast enlargement without surgery or anything, one full cup size up, in actually losing an inch on the waist. And this is in respected medical journals. So there's medical applications. But a lot of times when I deal with somebody, you know, I tell them I'm not doing anything medical, and I'm not even doing anything psychological. Most times the reason why people come to see me as a hypnotic problem solver, and again, I don't call myself a hypnotherapist. I hate the word therapist. I think it's a joke. I'm not interested in that. I don't want to hear anybody's problems. I don't want somebody sitting on my couch for 20 years and turning them into a monthly, you know, recurring revenue stream, or putting them on a bunch of pills and turn them into a revenue stream for big pharma. I want to solve the problem. And usually the problem is not medical. It's not psychological. Usually the problem is ethical. And this is where being a libertarian actually really comes in quite nicely, because I think it was Brian Kaplan, brilliant economist, author of, what's his book, Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, just The Myth of the Rational Voter, brilliant guy, says that libertarians are the way we are, for better or worse, because we are good at moral overlearning. That is, that we just take morality so seriously, more than your average person. And most times when people come to me as a hypnotist, and I'm very serious about this. This isn't to fit it into a libertarian peg, you know, peg hole or anything like that. That I'm very serious about this. Most times when people come to me, it's because they have an ethical problem. But the problem is, you have to understand, going around in life, and we try to be the best people that we can be, you know, especially as libertarians, trying not to harm anybody and try not, you know, not to commit fraud or anything of that nature. But by and large, the reason why people come to see me and why it's an ethical problem is because they don't trust themselves. You know, for example, somebody wanting to do smoking, or they've got really bad negative self-talk, bad self-image, or, you know, overeating, or they're, I get a lot of weird people who say they're addicted to porn, because I think I'm here in Utah and the predominant culture makes them feel shamed or so. I don't know what's going on. But bottom line is, they don't trust themselves. They're like, I want to stop doing X, and yet I keep doing X. And that is why I have a job, is because I'm helping people with their relationships with themselves. Because Ben, I mean, you know how it is. Life you can lie to your buddies or your friends or your kids or your wife or whatever and probably get away with it. Unfortunately, that's how the world works. But when you lie to yourself, you're the one doing the lying. I mean, you could stack BS and excuses and whatever, but you know it at a certain level. And so the point that I'm trying to make is that respect is earned, whether that respect is between you and me or it's self-respect. And I don't know, you know, personally, in my religious perspective, I'm just kind of agnostic because I have no clue what's going on. I don't pretend that I can have any idea. I just try to be a nice person and a good person. But I don't know if God is watching every little thing we do or if Santa's making a list at the end of the year. I don't know. But what I do know is your unconscious is watching you 100% of the time. Because that's how memory works. Again, it's unconscious. You don't have to think about it. It's not like, you know, a wonderful birthday or the birth of your children or your marriage. You go, hold on, everybody, stop. Let me hit this button in my brain and record. You're recording at all times and judging, and you can't help that. And so by and large, hypnosis is about making people conscious of their unconscious, which is basically being mindful, paying attention in the moment. So you're not a slave to these habits. I don't know if that makes sense. Sorry, I kind of...
No, that was perfect. I was sitting here nodding my head the whole time. It's just like, I mean, it just speaks truth. As you're saying that, you know, inside... Yeah, I've always contended this. You don't necessarily have to prove truth to people. If you speak truth, there's just something in the human mind that goes, that's right. I know that. I recognize that. That's right.
Well, and the funny thing is, you know, everybody, you know, so one of the biggest impediments and why I'm so involved with hypnosis, it was very powerful for me when I was a teenager. When I was 15, I had cancer and my oncologist at the University of Colorado Med Center suggested I look into it to help deal with some of the pain and the trauma and whatnot. And it was brilliant. It really was amazing. And so I've used it in a bunch of different areas of my life and had incredible results. And as such, I'm now at a stage in my life where I want to share that with people. And one of the biggest problems is there's this huge stigma that it is brainwashing or mind control or something, you know, there's some nefarious thing. It's not like that. And I don't know whether this will demystify hypnosis or somehow mystify things like literature and film and music. But for those who've never been hypnotized before, the feeling or the vibe or this sensibility is no different than when you go see a movie and you are just totally engrossed in it. Guess what? The movie's not real. Rocky is not a real boxer. Go look him up. There's no real Rocky Balboa. And yet you get so involved in the Rocky narrative that by the end of it, you hear that stupid theme, that dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-da-da. It's 2 weeks later and you're like, oh crap, I got to get to the gym. Now, were you brainwashed? No. At any point, you got to go pee, you get up and go pee, or you want to buy some popcorn, you go buy some popcorn. You're not brainwashed, but it's motivating. It touches a part of us. And so I always contend that being a good hypnotist, now, just like anything, some people suck and some people are good. But being a good hypnotist, in my estimation, is closest to being a good author. For example, Stephen King. That guy will have you checking under your bed at night or in your closet. Now, there's not really monsters or anything like that, but he is that powerful. Or 50 Shades of Grey or whatever the heck you're into. I don't judge. But the point is the same. This is about the power of words, the power of narratives. And, you know, people always ask me, well, oh, well, I saw a stage show. And I do stage shows and I love them. I actually prefer to do the comedy shows than I do the hypnotherapy, which I love. I love helping people with hypnotism. But you got to think of it this way. It's the same thing. People are like, oh, I saw these people doing these crazy things they never would do. Well, guess what? Being hypnotizable falls on a continuum. There are people who are more hypnotizable than others. And this has nothing to do actually with hypnosis. This is just suggestibility or whatever. And what's interesting is they find that these people who tend to be more hypnotizable also are the ones that test well on standardized testing. Things like the, you know, SAT or the ACT or LSAT or things of that nature. But think about it. Those people who test well on those standardized tests, let's just say, let's use that movie theater, the movie analogy again. Let's say it's Star Trek, you know, and we have 100 people and we all go see the new Star Trek movie. Out of that 100 people, 85, 80, something like that, they're going to be like, oh yeah, that was cool. And they'll talk about it at the water cooler the next day, or maybe they'll, you know, go buy a lunchbox for their kids or a t-shirt or something cool. And they'll go on with their life. But guess what? The other 10 or 15, they start going to conventions. They start dressing up and wearing weird ears and prosthetic foreheads and speaking Klingon. Are they brainwashed? Are they mind controlled? No. And guess what? Those are the same nerds that are really great at like geometry and computer programming and very logical thinkers. So this is something that is so completely natural and common in human beings. But it's one of those things that, again, like all of our unconscious processes, right now, this whole time, as I've been blathering on, everybody's been breathing and they hadn't even had to think about it. And it's the most important thing you do. I mean, you can go 40, you can go 30 days without food. You can go 3 days without water. You can go 3 hours in awful weather without adequate shelter, but you can go less than 3 minutes without a breath. It's your most important connection to life, and we totally take it for granted. And so it goes with this autopilot thing that's pretty much running our lives, and we never give it any attention. Now, hypnosis, meditation, all these things are now starting to get more respect, you know, in the West, because it's powerful stuff. I don't know. Does that make any sense to you?
It makes absolute sense. You know, if you think about it, throughout the ages, we have the human condition going all the way back as far in history as we know. The storyteller has been an intricate part of humanity.
Absolutely. And this is – and us as people who are anarchist and libertarian – this is important for us to realize, because, you know, we're always bummed out or freaked out and we get real conspiratorial or paranoid about propaganda. And it's a real thing. I mean, if you go look up on if you type in DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, they do all the crazy, freaky stuff that really does end up like, oh, the conspiracy theorists were right. They were doing this. Anyway, DARPA, one of their biggest research projects right now is to control propaganda through what is known as narrative networks. You know, it's a big subject that includes social media, mainstream media, but it's effectively propaganda, how to win hearts and minds through narratives. And it's just language. But I say that, and I don't mean to say just language. It's words are like powerful, man, and we need to respect that. But there, you know, it's being anarchist and libertarian. There's no top-down solution. What it is us taking responsibility. And this is, again, words are powerful, and I like to play with them, and I like to invent things, like I said in the beginning. And I've been playing with some of these concepts because I think they're important. Instead of calling myself libertarian, I've taken to calling myself a responsibilitarian, because I look at liberty and responsibility as two sides of the same coin, or, you know, a double-edged sword, as Parsons, the famous Aleister Crowley and libertarian said in his book. But liberty and responsibility, and this also goes to Thomas Zaz, who's a famous atheist, my friend Connor Boyack, who's a hardcore Mormon, has written a book, Latter-day Responsibility, a follow-up to his book Latter-day Liberty. People are making this connection now, and so I'm really trying to push this idea of being a responsibilitarian, which is basically, instead of a bill of rights, we have a bill of duties. We don't have a right to free speech. We have a duty to free speech. That subtle shift is important, because we stop asking and we start doing. We have a duty to defend ourselves, the Second Amendment, not a right. We have a duty, and it changes. It's important. So, you know, this idea of responsibilitarianism shows that everything is going to be bottom up. And so, part of my reasoning in trying to educate people about hypnosis and language, and it's not just, you know, like I said, the last 5 years I've been just involved with this connection between language and thought. The books that you mentioned at the beginning deal intimately with this, And not just in the subject matter, but the actual media itself. Words, again, it's just a different way with the written word instead of the spoken word. And then having my talk radio show for 3 years was a different way. But again, with words and the power and how that can affect people. And so we have to stop being freaked out by it. And just like any kind of, you know, when I called my old show Mental Self-Defense, the concept of mental self-defense is no different than physical self-defense insofar as it depends on what is known as situational awareness. Just being aware, being mindful, paying attention. And if you wanted to learn self-defense, you know, somebody was being a bully and was going to punch you, you have to go to a karate class or a wrestling class or whatever and learn to punch back. Or if they have a gun, you go buy a gun. And so this idea of mental self-defense is no different. It's just nonviolent insofar as you are going to take it upon yourself as a responsibilitarian to learn the methods of things like rhetoric. They're persuasive. Things like hypnosis, things like narratives, so that you can recognize them. You can appreciate them, but then you can have a more critical mind and say, it doesn't just slip in. You have this moment where it doesn't necessarily bypass your critical factor unless you want it to.
And we need to stick in a commercial here, so stick with us. We'll be right back with Jake Shannon, the most interesting man in the Liberty Movement. You know, once a rattlesnake bit him, and after 5 days of excruciating pain, the snake finally died. We'll be right back.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
How would you like to do something to support BadQuaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to BadQuaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give BadQuaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting BadQuaker.com. Thank you. And I'm back with Jake Shannon. And I was just joking before the break about the rattlesnake biting Jake, but he is so interesting that members of the Illuminati debate whether or not such a man can actually exist. You know, back we kind of talked about this a little bit before I started recording. Back when I was on still on Facebook, one of the reasons I got really frustrated with Facebook was during the Boston. We got a little feedback there. Hold on. Okay. During the Boston bombing, hype and everything that was going on and all the terrible stuff that was going on, I was watching the news media just literally playing with people's minds, putting out rumors, putting out lies, contradicting themselves, putting out stuff that just on its surface didn't make any sense at all. It just didn't match human behavior. And so I was digging around, bouncing from source to source, trying to figure out what was going on during that very confusing time frame. And I was finding on Facebook that I could post something and only one or two people would see it because my settings had suddenly changed. And so I'd go back into Facebook, I'd change the settings, and then I could post a silly picture, a cat picture, whatever. And everybody would see it. But then as soon as I would post something about the media and about the media's handling of the Boston bombing, that would suddenly, my settings would all change and only one or two people would see it. And I was looking at that thinking, you know, I don't want to be a crazy conspiracy theorist who's sitting around with foil on his head worrying if the Illuminati is watching me or whatever. But at the same time, somebody's doing something. I mean, it's clear that the media is playing with our minds, and who else is?
No, I mean, I totally get it, dude. And this is why you have to look at these things like DARPA dealing with narrative networks. You have to look at, for example, And the internet's been scrubbed clean. What's very interesting is it, if you look at, man, 1984 really is an operating manual for these tyrants today with regards to how media is manipulated and images and things of that nature, propaganda. But if you look up sock puppetry and the Pentagon, and sock puppetry is basically, it's an old internet thing where you would make up a fake username or fake identity. For example, I had in my martial arts business and endeavors, there was the guy, and what he would do is he would, you know, he had this good scam going where he told, you know, it's like the old 1970s Kung Fu master scam. Oh yeah, I'm the master of this long dead martial art, and there's, you know, my master's dead, so you can't verify that I actually know what I'm talking about. And I would wrestle, or I would fight you, but, you know, it's too deadly, I'd kill you, but. No, you just got to believe me. Take it on my word. Whatever. Anyway, so what he would do is he would go online and he'd create on all these martial arts forums these fake identities saying, oh, how smart he was or how tough he was and all this kind of stuff. And, well, the government does that. And this is – I mean, Wired used to have articles. It's hard to find. If you do spend enough time on Google typing in, again, sock puppetry – And what was the guy who – the CIA head who was the ex-military guy who got disgraced having an affair? Anyway, you type in his name and sock puppetry, you'll get something eventually because he was a big advocate for it.
Was it Petraeus?
Petraeus, yes. Rhymes with Petraeus with a B. So you look up Petraeus and you look up sock puppetry, you'll eventually come to it. Maybe type in Wired because I know Wired did a bunch of articles on it. But this is – it's how they can manipulate – in the same way they manipulate the mainstream media. And for a long time in my 2009 book, Anomaly, I pointed out a long time ago that, and maybe this is because I'm biased because I've written a couple books on the history of wrestling in the United States and in particular pro wrestling. And I look at politics as pro wrestling. And pro wrestling is a completely contrived fake thing where you have Stone Cold Steve Austin, I mean George Bush, and Barack Obama, I mean The Rock, walk down and they do their little fake fight and then, you know, the fans have their foam fingers and buy their concessions and whatever. And meanwhile, Vince McMahon walks away, you know, the guy who put on the promotion, making all the money. And I look at politics very much the same way, but you have to understand it doesn't have to be as blatant and as obvious as how pro wrestling is contrived. You just look at boxing. You can do in fight promotions, there's something known as a work. A work is when you take a dive or set up a fake fight or it's predetermined. You can set up a work or you can predetermine a match without anybody knowing except for the guy who loses, the guy who takes a dive. So everybody else could think it's real, but you pay off the guy who loses and tell him to keep his mouth shut with money or threats or whatever. And then the champion wins and you can keep setting it up that way. So you can manipulate a promotion like that through booking by having a decent guy and then book him against losers or against guys who are paid to lose. And politics is not all that different. So we have to kind of wake up a little bit. We have to be a little smarter about how things work so that we're not manipulated. But again, at the same time, and this is why I am anarchist, you can't keep looking for a top-down solution. It's not about voting. Voting, we all know, is ridiculous. I mean, I was very fortunate when I was in grad school getting my degree in financial engineering that I got a scholarship to go to George Mason University for like a week. They have this thing called a public choice outreach seminar, and public choice is just a school of economics that applies economic reasoning to political actors. I mean, that shocking idea that in economics, we all assume that people are rationally self-interested. Well, the public choice people just extended that and said, hey, why don't we pretend that politicians aren't these just, you know, altruistic, doing it for the good of humanity, and that maybe they're in politics for their own self-interest. And they started applying those methods. In fact, James Buchanan won the Nobel Prize for his work and developed that. That school very, very much, along with guys like, Gordon Tullock and a few others. It's kind of headquartered now at George Mason University. Anyway, long story short, when I was there, they turned me onto these ideas of, in particular, a French mathematician named Condorcet, who did a lot of work that predated some of the work of another Nobel laureate, Kenneth Arrow, and his impossibility theorem with regards to voting, that voting just is inefficient. It's a lame thing, and we all know that. I mean, we got the kind of whimsical, common sense approach of Benjamin Franklin when he says that, you know, voting is, you know, three wolves and a lamb voting on what's for dinner type of deal. And we all get that intuitively. But the actual mathematics don't work out very well. There's problems with things like transitivity and rank and choice and whatnot. So we know voting is a joke. Never in the history of a big election has it been decided by one vote. So really your vote doesn't matter. It's, again, just more of a parade, this fake phony contest. So this is why I'm pushing this idea of responsibilitarianism. And, you know, these things like social media, they're tough because they are manipulated. You don't own them. And in particular, something like Facebook, where they got a lot of their funding from in Qtel, which is a well-known CIA angel investing group. You know, there could be stuff. We don't know. But, you know, I think it's important for us to delineate a line between conspiracy theorists. I'm not interested in the moon landing. I'm not interested in, aliens or it's just not what a Bigfoot. I'm not interested in that stuff. You know, kind of the Art Bell radio show things. It's cool. I appreciate it. I don't knock anybody. It's like a religion. Like, hey, you're into that? Go for it. I don't care. But I think we have to make a sharp line between that and conspiracy evidence, you know, like, because conspiracy is natural. It's as natural as, you know, like me and my wife, we wanted to go out on a date last night. So we conspired and we hired a nanny and set it up. So, I mean, anytime you do something discreetly, the difference is between, say, me and my wife, where our conspiracy only affects our three children, somebody who is very wealthy and powerful, their conspiracy might affect millions or billions of people. I mean, that's just – so it's very natural. But then again, we can't get too bogged down in it because if these people are so conspiratorial, guess what? If they're a conspiratorial type of person and that's what they do, then eventually they're going to start conspiring against each other. So, you know, I mean, we have to look at this kind of rationally and not getting – so crazy and negative and you know, it's kind of the same reason like we were talking before, you fired up the podcast. The hard part of what I think somebody like yourself and what maybe I do to a lesser extent, especially now that I'm not doing radio, you know, it can be negative. You know, it could be a lot of negative crap and it sucks, dude. And you know, is that really our purpose in this life? You know, if you're a theist, you know, did God put us here to live this life where we're just constantly paranoid and bummed out about the man keeping us down and all that? Is that our I don't think that's my purpose. I do realize there's suffering in the world and I want to alleviate it, but that also includes myself. And again, this goes back to the hypnosis about my relationship with myself. I don't want to be a big fat jerk to myself and always dwelling on the negative. And so, guess what? Not only are there negative conspiracies, there's benevolent conspiracies.
Right.
We never focus on that. That's why, you know, these hippies and these people on Facebook, oh, I'm going to do, you know, 30 days of gratitude post every day about, but that's actually kind of important because it makes us really realize what is important in our lives and helps keep our attention, our conscious mind. It's the only thing you control is your conscious mind, is your attention. And if it's always it's like a spotlight. If it's always focused on a steaming pile of dog poo, oh man, you're going to have a certain reaction. It's automatic. But if you keep it focused on something beautiful and amazing, then you're going to have another reaction. And it's hard. That is a very hard balance, I think, for people who are maintained, especially in just this idea of liberation, of human liberation and ending suffering and trying to keep people from being unfair to each other. It's a hard thing to keep balanced and it's hard to not get bitter and cynical. And we do have to sometimes retreat and step away and recharge those batteries.
Yeah. And, you know, that's actually one of the nice things about talking to you, is that when I do it, I begin to do that. I don't know, you know, it's not just the hypnotist thing. It's actually that as you talk, And whenever I listen to you, like when you were on the radio and I would listen with the rebroadcasts, what you're saying just is soothing, and it makes me think, yeah, everything's going to be all right. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through all this. And I think that's as important, you know, to have those positive feelings and to have a good outlook is as important as realizing, yeah, they're out to get us. They are. And there are elements who want to do us harm and want to take over everything and want to do all, you know, all those evil things. But we're going to be okay anyway. And I hate to say it, but it's kind of one of those physician heal thyself things. We have to have that healing inside of ourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. So, you know, the power of words and crafting them, not in some dry, boring way, but like an artist, like a brilliant poet or writer or, you know, a lyricist. I mean, this is what makes life amazing. And this is like the power of oratory, like a William Lloyd Garrison. Personally, Lincoln, I don't even think it's just my opinion. I think it's opinion of a lot of people who've really studied this subject deeply. Lincoln had diddly shit to do with freeing the slaves, ultimately. Who it was the abolitionists, guys like William Lloyd Garrison. And they were impassioned, brilliant speakers. His newsletter was called The Liberator. And literally freed in the most blatant way people from slavery. And that's something we have to keep in mind. And one of the things that's frustrating to me, as somebody who's been involved with these ideas for quite a long time, for me anyway, I just turned 40, so about half of my life since 93 or 94, I've been involved with these ideas. One of the things that's the most frustrating for me also as an anarchist or a libertarian is this idea, and the two are not synonymous. I mean, obviously, you know, we know there's like small government libertarians and there's left libertarians and conservatarians and all these kinds of stuff, whatever. Anyway, the thing that's important is that, and this is so frustrating to me, and I call them sometimes baby libertarians. That's these people who are so excited and so enamored with this idea. And I get it, man, because I was there. Of liberty and these ideas. And, you know, the big conduit, the big the vagina by which these baby libertarians came to us used to be Ayn Rand. She was the one that turned everybody on. Well, now that vagina, and this is just such an awful metaphor, is Ron Paul. But I guess it's a good one, right? Because he was an obstetrician. But Ron Paul has turned on all these people, and it's great. I'm excited. I'm a libertarian. I'm happy to have more people because as a peace lover, the change, the revolution, the peaceful revolution is going to come from critical mass of people getting all together and persuading people. But that's the funny thing. And this is my domain, word, language, persuasion, is that all these baby libertarians suck. They're awful. They're turning people off. They get in and they adopt this rhetoric of either a Rand or a Rothbard. And these are smart people. Don't get me wrong. I have plenty where I disagree with both of them, but I respect them deeply for what they've been able to do. However, their rhetoric is almost cultish. Their rhetoric is very off-putting. And now what I find funny is somebody who you would have to call Ron Paul, for example, a minarchist or a supporter or a believer or a user of minimal government. They came to the ideas of anarchism through Ron Paul, and yet now they're holier than thou and thumbing their nose at somebody like Ron Paul. I mean, it's just the irony to me, the blindness that these people have to their own path to liberation and then chastising people. This holier than thou thing is kind of, it seems like almost like a vestige. And I think it's human nature. I think it's something we have to just be wary of, like the fact that power corrupts. I don't care who you are. You give somebody too much power, it's a bad thing. But I think that we have this inborn tendency, this holier than thou attitude. Oh, I'm more punk rock than you. Oh, I'm more atheist than you. I'm more Christian than you. I'm more libertarian or anarchist or blah, blah, blah. The fact is we need to stop looking and being such purists, and we have to find common ground. I mean, I saw this you know, Russell Brand came out and he's really good at doing these viral videos, and whether that's just because it's organic or whether because, you know, he's some funded prop. I don't know. I don't have any idea. But I actually like his humor. I think he's quite funny. He says a lot of great things in terms of diagnosing the problems. Yes, there is vast inequity. Yes, there are all kinds of awful things happening, and I agree with that. Now, his prescription is wrong because he says he wants like some socialist scheme or whatever, but he clearly hasn't thought it out very thoroughly, and that's okay. But what this is another idea that I've been playing with and trying to promote within, you know, the liberty movement or whatever the hell we call ourselves. And that is, it's a complement to the non-aggression principle. We all know what that is. And this idea of, you know, my formulation is that I'm a pacifist that will punch you back. Just leave me alone and we're cool, right? But a nice complement to go with this non-aggression principle is something that I'm trying to promote called the non-passive aggressive principle. So instead of the NAP, and a nice little corollary is the NPAP, the non-passive aggressive principle. And that is basically, don't be a douchebag. Don't be one of these people that has to come off as like condescending or lecturing or blah, blah, blah. Just be cool. And if you find somebody who sees the same problem as you, maybe they have a different solution. But guess what? Nobody's going to agree with anybody 100% unless you are some sort of weird cult member or clone. And libertarians, it's like herding cats. We're all so individualistic. Nobody's ever going to agree. So we need to stop focusing on putting our conscious mind on, our attention on our disagreements, and look at our common ground so we can build a critical mass. And so, you know, I really hope that we can start teaching people how to be much more persuasive. I mean, guys like you, guys like Molyneux, seem to get it, where there's this friendliness and there's this, you know, willingness to discuss, and it doesn't get ugly, or, you know, that it's important. And that has nothing to do with logic. I mean, in the classical sense of, you know,
rhetoric and so forth.
Yeah. Syllogisms and things of that nature. That has to do with being social and getting people to believe as you do, not through any kind of surreptitious means, but through just being a good person and being kind and patient sometimes, and understanding that everybody in this world is just trying to do the best that we can. And so it's funny, you know, these holier-than-thou anarchists now are coming down on people like Ron Paul or whatever, and I get it. I mean, or somebody like Rand Paul. I disagree with Rand Paul on so much stuff. I totally get it. But at least he's out there talking about it, you know? And look at somebody like Bradley Manning. Or Chelsea Manning, or Edward Snowden. These are people who made their money through living off the taxes that you and I pay. Okay? So they were inside the system. But those people have done more to change the system from within than a lot of us on the outside here, you know, with our bullhorn screaming or whatever our method is for change. And I call these people the libertarian fifth column. They're the people inside that have that sensibility. And we need to respect that. They're doing, I mean, the sacrifices Chelsea Manning made or Edward Snowden made are epic, man. That is epic.
I think there's a lot more of them out there than we even can conceive of, too.
Oh, I guarantee you they're crap. The establishment is crap in their pants.
Imagine, I know you're there in Utah and the big spy, complex is being built out there in Utah. And I've talked about this before. They're having all kinds of little technical problems and even to the point of having small fires within the building.
Right.
Because wiring is bad and so forth. And I've mentioned this before in the podcast, but I can't help but to wonder how many people are there as contractors or whatever, just intentionally doing a really crappy job because they know, you know, hey, I have to make a living. I'm doing this. I have to make a living. But, you know, I think I'm just going to use a number 14 gauge wire here instead of a number 12.
It's the libertarian fifth column, man. I mean, people need to look up before Edward Snowden. There was a great guy, William Binney. William Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y, I believe. And tons of videos on YouTube. You need to be spreading these. This is a guy waking people up. But going back to to this responsibilitarianism, we can't all work inside the system. And so those of us who are maybe agorist by decision decided not to, or just lucked out, we don't work for the man, whatever the case may be. You know, the next phase here, the biggest liberator of humankind has not been a legislator and hasn't even, and I would maybe argue, isn't even an orator or, you know, some guru or whatever like that. It's technology. And if we want to truly be free, we could see it now with this cryptocurrencies and 3D printing and all this kind of stuff. We need to be taking very seriously distributed technologies, 3D printing, encryption, cryptocurrencies. This people like the Electronic Freedom or the Electronic Frontier Foundation have been pioneering this for ages. And actually, I've got a funny story, because back in the late 90s, while I was in grad school and before grad school, I worked for Laissez-Faire Books. They were headquartered in San Francisco. And I ended up becoming the manager of their shipping department, which was brilliant. It was like a graduate degree for libertarianism, because I was just in these stacks. They had the biggest library. This is before Amazon came and killed them. But they had the biggest library of all the libertarian books, and not just your standard stuff from Rand and Rothbard, but I mean, going into great guys like, Nozick and the work of some people that should be read, like Ted Galen Carpenter or David Beto or Jeffrey Rogers Hummel, just great stuff. Anyway, while I was working there, we not only sent out did the shipping for Laissez-Faire Books, but we also did the shipping for the Cato Institute and the, Future Freedom Foundation. And, so I was able to read a bunch of Cato policy analysis and a bunch of, stuff by like guys, brilliant guys like Sheldon Richmond that was published by the Future Freedom Foundation. Anyway, long story short, I'm in San Francisco. I lived kind of near the Panhandle, kind of by, Golden Gate Park in the mid to late 90s. Anyway, I go to a coffee shop on one of my days off, and there's this old scraggly hippie guy in there, total looks like your cliche of somebody on the left, you know, the beard and the multicolored rainbow shirt and the Birkenstocks and all that kind of stuff. And in his hand, he's got a Cato policy analysis. And this is in San Francisco. So this is back when, you know, in most people's minds, libertarianism was synonymous with conservative. They didn't understand that we actually were more liberal on drugs and civil liberties and things of that nature than the quote unquote liberals. Anyway, I see it, and it's just such a contradictory picture in my mind. And I go, I'm like, hey, dude, I mailed that to you. Do you know that? I actually work downtown. And he's like, oh, cool. Hey, man, my name's John Gilmore. John Gilmore is like the founder of the EFF, one of the founders of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, like this mega guru in the encryption movement and stuff. And he lived right across the street from me. I mean, it's a small world. I've met so many cool people through the Liberty Movement. Like John Gilmore, Eric Raymond, author of Cathedral and the Bazaar, John Stagliano, better known as, I think his name was Buttman. He was a big, huge porn entrepreneur. All these interesting, it's such a cool tent. That covers all of us. It's so wonderful, so diverse, and so crazy, and so bizarre. I really love, liberty, and I love the people. It's really amazing.
Hey, let me ask you a question in a totally different direction. We were talking earlier about hypnotism and what it is and what it isn't and everything. And I wanted to, I would be doing my listeners a disservice if I had you on and didn't have you address the difference between what you do as hypnotism and what stuff like the what was the CIA operation back in the 50s and 60s?
Oh, MK Ultra.
Yeah. What's your thoughts about that, and what how does that play into what you do?
So, you know, actually one of the books I wrote, I think this was 2010 or maybe it was 2011. I can't remember what the exact publishing year, but I wrote a book called The Hypnotist, Healer, Head Hacker, and Headliner. And that should be on that list. And it's cheap. Actually, I just lowered all the costs on all my self-published books. I have a couple books that are published by other publishing houses, and I can't control those prices. But the ones I published, I'm selling them for cost. Literally, it's like $5 or something. It's cheap. Anyway, one of the books, the hypnotist, I go in depth into this. I talk about kind of the history and the medical purposes. I talk a little bit about what you're talking about, the nefarious purposes, or what's known as antisocial hypnosis. And then I also talk about some of the entertainment, side of hypnosis, and all the various strange connections. For example, Mark Twain, actually worked as a plant, for a hypnotist, a stage hypnotist who sucked. He needed a plant to pretend to be hypnotized. Very few people know that about Mark Twain. But, what you're talking about is antisocial hypnosis, and there are applications. And again, this speaks to this concept of mental self-defense. The answer isn't making it illegal. The answer isn't – because what's happened is, you know, we always hear of somebody who has the gift of the gab, or they're a slick talker or something of that nature, right? And they're manipulative, or they're able to get what they want out of life by using language. I mean, I'm just shifting perspectives here. It depends on the way and the person you're talking to. For example, somebody who's a kick-ass salesman – that's how they put food on the table for their kids, you know, or for their family. And it's sales. But sometimes salesmen, you know, the cliche, and I hate to do this to used car salesmen because there's some great ones out there, but you know, the cliche of a used car salesman where you get a lemon, you get buyer's remorse. So there are these uses, obviously, where language and hypnosis can be used against you. But the only defense is this, you know, one of the, most popular idioms about hypnosis to come out of the 20th century was this idea that you can't be hypnotized against your will. And that's sort of true. It's mostly true. If you want to make it 100% true, you just add this couple words. You can't be hypnotized against your will if you're aware that you're being hypnotized.
Right.
Right. So think about Bernie Madoff. You know who I'm talking about, the guy who's in prison for doing all the securities fraud, right?
Right.
Here's a guy has a great position, head of NASDAQ or whatever the hell, or Dow Jones or whatever he was the head of. Very reputable. Could speak, spit all the words out that made sense and made it sound like he was smart and reliable. And yet he was totally milking people in a Ponzi scheme. I mean, this is just how it was. And this is what the Federal Reserve does. And I mean, it's the same thing, but he got busted. He's lower on the level to where he couldn't probably buy enough judges and whatnot and politicians. So the bottom line is this, is that the way to defend yourself against these things is by studying them, by understanding the methods and the tricks. Now, I touch upon that a little bit in the book, but the book is mostly about kind of history and concepts and ideas. It's not so much about techniques. This year, what I've launched is this project that I'm working on now, called the Institute for Hypnosis. And I'm teaching people these tricks, how to do it. And it's a mixture of kind of the traditional curriculum in hypnosis. I was very disappointed, as I surveyed how people were learning hypnosis and why so many hypnotists suck, frankly. And, so I just had to take it upon myself to design a curriculum that I felt was better. And I include things from rhetoric. I include things from more esoteric or arcane subjects like various yogas and, forms of meditation and whatnot, into it. And it's very, very powerful. And anyway, bottom line is, just like physical self-defense, if you're worried about somebody punching you or twisting your arm the wrong way, you go learn at a self-defense place and practice punching and how not to get your arm twisted. And that's what you have to do if you're going to be a good listener to the Ben Stone Bad Quaker podcast and be a responsibilitarian, take charge of your own life. You have to actually take the time to learn how to defend your physical body and your mind. And that again, largely has to do with situational awareness and just knowing if somebody's going to try to attack you. You know, they talk about in like these women's self-defense seminars, when you're walking out in a parking lot late at night or in a park or something like that, don't be looking at your cell phone. Be alert. Look up. Be aware, because that is going to do a lot to prevent it happening in the very first place.
I taught my children.
I hope that helps.
Oh yeah, I taught my children that from the earliest ages, that anytime that they're walking across the parking lot, walking, you know, in a mall or whatever, keep their head up, keep their eyes looking back and forth, and keep their, at least keep one hand free at all times, and just make it a habit of doing that. And because, people who will attempt to do you harm will see that, and that will transmit to them the message that you're not a soft target.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you're a smart person and somebody tries to come in with a scam, they try to play three card Monty with you, you know, in the back of a subway, you're like, yeah, no, I know how this game works, dude. This is a scam. I'm not interested. And you walk away and it's no, it's like nothing ever happened. But if you're a fool, like, oh yeah, maybe I can win, you're going to lose all your money. And one of the easiest things that you can do, what's funny is that again, you throw out the word hypnosis and people just get all crazy because of the power of that word. You know, there's so much baggage on it. But one of the simplest ways that you can inoculate yourself against all these kind of attacks is simply studying the informal fallacies of logic. Now, I say those words and people tune out and they start going into a trance thinking about something else because they're bored. But the fact is the informal fallacies, things like what is an ad hominem argument? What's ad baculum? What's begging the question? What's a straw man? You have to actually study these. So when you're presented with them, you're like, ah, what is an appeal to emotion? You know what? So you understand them. It's as simple as that. That's your jab. That's your right cross. That's your double leg takedown. I mean, these are, you understand? So I'm using physical self-defense as a metaphor. But I think it's an apt one. I don't think there's a huge shift. It's just, it's about paying attention. If you step into a boxing match, you don't tune out. You don't text. You don't listen to your iPod. You're paying attention because the guy's going to punch you in the face.
And the more you do that, the better, the more it becomes natural. It's just like, I used to practice boxing all the time for my workouts. And you get to the point of where the movements become natural. You don't even have to think about them. It's just like, it's like the way that, you know, some people would be sitting on a couch and you reach over to your side and you pick up a glass off of a coffee table or whatever. And you don't, you know, you don't think about every aspect of what you're doing. It becomes natural because you've done it all your life. And the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, like what did Aristotle say? He says, we are what we repeatedly do. You know, excellence habit. So if you get really good at moping and whining about the man and how he's keeping you down, you're going to get really good at moping and whining about that. And that's going to give you a certain effect. But if you get really good at standing in front of a heavy bag or in front of a speed bag, sparring with an opponent, you're going to get damn good at that. It's how are you spending your time? Where is your focus? Where is your conscious mind? The unconscious will follow that. It will react to that.
And that's what happens when, like, if you're watching the news or you're, you know, just surfing across the internet and see a news site or a news story or whatever, you can, the more you do this, the more you can train your mind in the realm of logic and to be able to spot those fallacies, the easier it is, or even if you're listening to a podcast or something on YouTube or whatever, and they throw one of these at you, you can spot it immediately. Aha, you're playing with my brain. And you take yourself out of the victim mode and you become that person walking across the parking lot with a set of keys in one hand and their eyes looking back and forth. You become that person, not the victim, you know, laying there with their purse snatched or whatever.
Yeah. And you know, I talk about this a bit in my 2009 book, Anomaly, which is really talking about the philosophy and the rhetoric of science of how do we know what we know, you know, epistemology, things of that nature, and applying it hopefully to everyday life. And one of the things that I advocated in 2009, this is before anybody else was doing it. There was no websites or anything like that. I was talking about this idea of the trivium, and the trivium is a method or a canon of knowledge from the classical liberal education. You know, we all hear of like a liberal arts degree. And unfortunately, that term liberal has been co-opted to mean socialist or progressive, but you know, used to mean liberal, used to mean basically what we mean by libertarian. And the classical liberal education, the libertarian education, the classical liberal arts degree was made up, the basis was this trivium made up of grammar, of logic, and rhetoric. And I've been promoting that hard since 2009. And since then I've seen, I know, Alex Jones has some guys that have jumped on the bandwagon, and there's another guy, Jan Irving, who's done some interesting work and has some websites, and they've been popping up, and they're all doing their own take, and they have their own particular things. So whatever, find your own path. But the Trivium is a great place to start. The best book out there is actually written by a nun, Sister Joseph, and you can find it on Amazon. It's called The Trivium. I have a recommended reading list in my Anomaly book. In all my books, I put some stuff for if you're interested in further reading. But The Trivium is a great mental martial art to know for self-defense. And it's not taught. So what's interesting is when – and, you know, John Taylor Gatto discusses this in a lot of his books. He's a brilliant educator. And he talks about this, how the modern system is dumbing us down, and largely as a result of, you know, wealthy philanthropists. I say that with air quotes because, you know, it was guys like the Harrimans and the Rockefellers and that funded this because they weren't interested. They're like, you know what? These critical thinkers coming from a Trivium and then kind of the graduate level of that is the Quadrivium. So there's seven different subjects in the classical liberal arts. But the fundamentals, the basic, like if every NBA player that makes a bajillion dollars still does the basics, throws layups and free throws. The basics was the Trivium, and they had to get rid of that. And that's why we've got now kind of this, you know, Dewey system, this, and now Common Core to further create dumb robots for, you know, meat puppets for the grist for the mill.
Yeah, or as I think Stefan Molyneux coined the phrase that we're livestock, you know, and it's really true.
Yeah.
We're kind of running late on time, but do you want to go into the thing with the what happened at LAX and all that, or do you want to save that for another time?
You know, I just find it very interesting. It's at this point, you know, part my philosophy borders nearly on solipsism, this idea that we can only know what we know of our own from our own senses. I'm not saying that that's it, but I'm saying pretty close. Because once you start venturing into secondhand information, you start running into distortions with the information. The fidelity of the signal and the mix between signal and noise gets a little shifted. And even our own perceptions are prey to illusions. We have cognitive illusions. We can be deceived and lied to. And so, you know, I border on this idea of solipsism, like the old school skeptics, not these so-called skeptics now that, you know, only focus on false positives, but then totally forget about the concept of false negatives, or in the statistical literature, what is, you know, inductive reasoning. These so-called skeptics focus on type one errors in reasoning, which are errors, and we should look out. That's when you see the moon and you're like, oh, there's a man. And you're like, no, it's actually craters. It's we impose a meaning on meaningless noise. And that's important for us not to do. And that's why they're always going after the conspiracy theorists and, you know, things of that nature. But, and this is something that why I named my book Anomaly, the idea of anomalistics from Thomas Kuhn's book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, this idea that there are these blips, these glitches in the matrix, these anomalies that we need to, that's the path to new knowledge. That blows apart the pre-existing belief pattern or paradigm. And that is usually through embracing and making sure that you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And that is this idea of type two errors. And so, you know, this thing with Ciencia, this kid, I mean, this to me is like a conspiracy theorist wet dream, man, because the guy's name is Ciencia, which is, if you spell it, C-I-A-N-C-I-A. I mean, it's just like, oh, man. And on top of that, he was 23 years old, which there is like a whole 23 conspiracy. And then on top of that, he had some note supposedly in his knit backpack talking about the New World Order and fiat currencies and stuff. Now, whether he actually wrote that or what the deal is, we don't know any of this. And that's why I say, just don't get frustrated on it, man. Whether it was, you know, everybody's talking about false flags, and it very well could be. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody really knows except for the guy. And then he got shot in the mouth, supposedly. So we probably won't ever get a true story. We won't know. It's like the Kennedy thing. That doesn't mean that we don't know. We know for a fact that power corrupts, and that a lot of the people at the top of this system are psychopaths and they don't have empathy. But What can you do about it? The most important thing for liberty, as I've hopefully, is responsibility. And that's individual liberty and that's individual responsibility, taking charge of your own life. And don't get dragged down into this narrative, into this, who knows who's making the propaganda. Maybe they're trying to instigate a fight or whoever they is. I don't know. But we have to step back and take responsibility for our own lives, look at the people in our own lives, count our blessings, and start concentrate on growing those. And then after that, enough blessings that we could start sharing with everybody else. And if everybody did that, and we realized that this is about love and focused on the love instead of the people who aren't loving, I think we'd have a lot better results. I think it would happen faster. And I think people would just generally be happier in their lives. So yeah, I realize we're running out of time, and I don't want to abuse your listeners' eardrums any further. So I just appreciate you giving a crap about some of the things I think about, and I definitely appreciate the fact that you're out there putting this podcast out. 350, what is it?
350. This is the 359th.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I think we've left it on a positive note, which is what I really wanted to do. Because it's so important, you know, I just want to emphasize what you just said, that it's so important that we're responsible for ourselves. And I'll put a link in today's show notes to an article that you have on your blog about this stuff that we've been talking about today. But I really want to encourage the listeners to follow that link and get over there and read the article on that blog. I think it's about, what, 3 or 4 days old, something like that, Jake?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to be better about blogging. I've been blogging for like 10 or 12 years, and then it, like, I skip like entire years and then I pick it up again. So I'm trying to be better and more consistent and sharing some of these ideas. And I'm hoping that these ideas are more, maybe, I don't want to use the word original because I don't want to knock anybody, but I'm saying like ideas to expand more. I'm trying to be more artistic with this idea of, or more creative with this idea of liberty, and extend it beyond quoting people who've already tried to do that for their generation. I think we need to keep pushing forward and exploring these ideas. And that's kind of what I'm just doing and playing with it at the blog. And it, you know, now that I quit the radio show, I got a heck of a lot more time to write. So.
And speaking of radio shows, I just want to give a quick shout out. When Jake and I are all done talking here, I'm going to log on to probably the Genesis Communication Network, GCNlive.com, and listen to the Freedom Fiends Live. They're every Saturday and Sunday, but starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. And you can also listen to them on the Liberty Radio Network. That's at LRN.FM. That's a little commercial for my friends over at the Freedom Fiends radio show. And Jake, I really want to let you know I appreciate you coming on the show today. And I waited too long. Actually, it's been about a year. I should have had you on a long time ago. But thanks for coming back on today. And hopefully we'll get you back on a little sooner next time.
Hey, thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. And just keep up the great work.
And folks, thanks for listening today. And remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thank you very much, folks.